This is the Olabo Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, halfway through the program. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. As part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day, the Jets and the Ottawa Senators, a 1 o'clock puck drop this afternoon. You can hear the game live on this fine station. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Associated Press, we're pleased to welcome to the program our very good friend, Stephen Wino. Stephen, good morning. First things first, the most important question, how is Shadow the Golden?
Good morning. He's doing really well. He's resting out back and playing the yard right now. He just got finished a four-mile walk. So it's about 24 Fahrenheit here, so cold, but perfect weather for a golden retriever.
There you go. That's good to see that Shadow's doing well as we get closer to the NHL trade deadline, which I'm sure he has circled on his doggy calendar, Stephen. You know, it's shaping up to be, I think, a bit of a wild and woolly next couple weeks in the NHL, where you have sort of the contenders, and I would say the contenders are relatively defined, and then you have, you know, most other teams in the NHL. I could see this sort of being a chaotic next couple weeks. How do you foresee the next few weeks shaking out?
Chaotic is right, but also like a little uncertain because there aren't a whole lot of teams out there that are defined sellers, right? Like unless you are Ottawa, New Jersey, Detroit, LA, I guess, even though the Kings are a handful of points out of a playoff spot. The point is the standings are so tight in that so many teams can consider themselves in it. I guess the Rangers are certainly a seller in there too. I think there's going to be a lot of teams, honestly, that are buyers and sellers. Look at a team like Columbus or Philadelphia, places where there are rentals out there, pending UFAs, Wayne Simmons, Artemi Panarin, Sergei Bobrovsky, but also teams that want to either go for it this year like Columbus does, or Philadelphia where Chuck Fletcher wants to build toward trying to win next year, to where you're going to be seeing some teams doing a mix of buying and selling. Even the Washington Capitals with Andrei Burakovsky, who almost certainly won't be qualified as an RFA this summer, I think there's going to be a lot of uncertainty about what teams are, and we're not going to be able to define true buyers and sellers outside of the contenders you mentioned.
Stephen, you had a really good article recently for the Associated Press talking about the St. Louis Blues and how they've changed their game under Craig Berube to more of a north-south game. And obviously, you know, the Blues are a great story, a team that, you know, looked like they were completely out of the playoff picture, and now they belong, they own one of those wild card spots. Is it possible that, you know, not only will this Blues team squeak into the playoffs, but they could actually give someone a run for their money there in the first round?
If the goaltending is good, yes. If the goaltending is there like it was for stretches from Jake Allen and Jordan Binnington, that yes, this is a team that could make a potential run or upset a team in the first round, because look at all the talent on that team. I mean, Vladimir Tarasenko, Ryan O'Reilly, Petrangelo, go down the list. I mean, Colton Parayko. There's so much talent on that team that everyone, you kind of scratch your head about why they started so poorly. Craig Berube came in and did what he does. I mean, he turned the team from too fancy and a lot of mistakes into a kind of more fundamentally sound team. They became better defensively. They managed the puck better. And this is a team now that with so much talent and a system that works for that group as kind of a big and heavy team with some skill. I would not want to play, if I'm the Jets or the Flames or the Sharks or the Predators, I'm not sure I'm going to play the Blues in the first round.
You know, Stephen, are the New York Islanders the Rodney Dangerfield of the NHL? Because it just seems like they get no respect, and nobody really ever seems to be talking about them, but they remain first in the Metropolitan Division. And just it just seems to me, and again, we don't follow the Islanders as closely here in Winnipeg, but they just don't seem to garner a lot of conversation around the league.
Yeah, and I think they like being the Rodney Dangerfield of the NHL. Like, this is a team that, after John Tavares left last summer, kind of took the chip on the shoulder of, everyone thinks we're going to be the worst team in the NHL. Everyone thinks we're going to be worse. Because you lose a point a game playmaker like John Tavares, that's what's most likely going to happen. But you bring in a Barry Trotz and Mitch Korn as a goaltending, whatever his title is, goaltending guru for the Islanders there, to get Robin Lehner and Thomas Greiss playing like this, it's a spectacular story. But this is the what Barry Trotz has done with the Islanders, to me, is a lot like what he did with the Predators. It's not as much a Capitals job because he had so much talent and superstars and skill there. he's getting so much out of the Anders Lee, the Baileys, the Barzells, those kind of guys, that this is a really good team, and they don't allow a whole lot of shots, which helps their goaltenders, but they've also gotten saves this year, which is something they haven't gotten in the past. And when you combine the structure of Barry Trotz, which is better than what Doug Weight had there, and the goaltending that they're getting, and yeah, this is a really good team that we're not talking enough about.
Stephen Wino of the Associated Press is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the NHL, looking around the league with Stephen. And Stephen, the biggest splash, I guess, on the trade market so far, you know, as we approach the trade deadline, was made by the Pittsburgh Penguins when they made the big deal with the Florida Panthers. I guess that was, last week at this point in time. The Penguins, though, are only a point up on the Carolina Hurricanes for the final wild card spot, yet they're also tied with the Columbus Blue Jackets for third in the Metropolitan Division. Are the Penguins sort of that dark horse right now in that we know the talent they have on their team? They're sort of laying in wait, you know, to see when they're maybe going to start to make their move in that Metropolitan Division?
Yeah, and that's why I'm interested to see what else Jim Rutherford does ahead of the trade deadline, because he has made some moves in the past on this year, not only Alexiak, but obviously the Bukestad trade and Jared McCann, that he's willing to shake up his team and make those moves, because things are so unpredictable there that we don't know who's definitely in. I mean, I don't think the Capitals or Islanders are going to fall out. But between the Blue Jackets and Penguins, given the role the Hurricanes are on right now, we have no clue who's going to make it in the Metropolitan Division. But this is the Penguins should be a playoff team. Well, let's start with that. This should be a team that is able to flip a switch. I just don't know if they can flip a switch and become a dominant team for the rest of the season. We know what they can do come playoff time. With Crosby, with Malkin, with Letang. I do think it hurts them not to have a strong two-goalie system like they did when Marc-Andre Fleury was there a couple of years ago. But Matt Murray's good enough. This team should be in the playoffs. But Carolina's also a team that I had counted out a long time ago, and I'm stunned that the Hurricanes are in it with Curtis McElhinney and Peter Mrazek.
Stephen, we got to keep the trade chatter going, because at this time of year, everybody wants to talk about the moves, and the trade deadline is coming up in less than 3 weeks. And earlier this week, the Nashville Predators acquired Brian Boyle and gave up a second-round pick. And some people were surprised, in fact, that the Predators and David Poile gave up that second-round pick. And first part of the question was, what did you think of that move? Obviously, a guy that's had a lot of playoff experience. And second part of the question is, do you think that David Poile has a big move coming up, whether that's going to be, you know, a player like Matt Duchene, a top six forward, or, you know, a top six winger? Do you think that another big move is coming for David Poile?
I do, and I was a little surprised at the second round pick, but it leads me to believe that the prices are going to be high for deadline pickups for rentals. Guys like Wayne Simmonds, Matt Duchene, Mark Stone, Panarin. This is going to cost a lot, a hefty price for contenders. But David Poile has to look at this season, and the Jets are great. There's a possibility that this is one of maybe his final seasons as general manager. I mean, he's getting up there in age. We don't know how long he's going to be running that team. And you have prospects. You have Elias Tolvanen and a little bit of salary cap space. But I do think the Predators are looking. I don't know if it's going to be a Simmonds or a Stone or a Panarin. I think one of those two guys ends up with the Predators at some point before the deadline. But it's a little bit of an arms race in the West between the Jets, the Predators, the Flames, and the Sharks, and I guess even the Golden Knights. I think those are the five legitimate playoff teams in the West. And I think David Poile looks at Nashville and says, this is a team that needs a little bit more to get through that gauntlet.
You know, Steven, you talked about the haves in the West, but the have-nots, I mean, I keep hitting refresh on NHL.com standings because I still can't believe the Los Angeles Kings, who are in last spot, are only 5 points out of a second wildcard spot. Do you think this is a good thing for the NHL to have, like, I mean, I can't remember a season ever before where you've had this much, these many teams so close to the playoffs at this point in the season?
Look, the NHL likes it. The NHL likes the fact that everybody is in it. And parity, and this is why they're never going to change the point system. It's never going to go to a 3-2-1 point system, because the NHL likes this. They like that it's almost like a crushed butane of kind of everybody in the same kind of stratosphere in terms of the standings. But I don't necessarily think it's good. I think there's a lot of mediocre teams in the Western Conference. I mean, beyond those top five teams, I think in the West, there's a whole lot of not all that interesting out there. I mean, Connor McDavid could get the Oilers in there. The Blues could be in there. The Kings, Rob Blake's already selling. I mean, even as close as they are to the playoffs, I think there's a real reason about as a franchise, as a team, and that getting in to just lose maybe not is not the best thing long term for that franchise. But I don't necessarily think it's a great thing, because it's not like it's gonna a hot race. Teams just keep losing. I mean, you get the point where the Ducks have lost a million games now, 18 of 20, having only, 4 points out of a playoff spot? I don't know that that's a great thing for the quality of hockey from now to the end of the season.
Last question for you, Steven. There were two teams earlier in the year that had affirmed themselves as up-and-coming and maybe even upper-echelon teams that have now fallen out of the playoff spots. That's the Colorado Avalanche and the Buffalo Sabres. The Sabres had, a 10-game winning streak earlier, and the Avalanche were battling with the Jets and the Predators up at the top of the Central Division. Of those two teams, can you see either of them turning around the season and getting into the playoffs?
No, I don't. And Colorado is probably closer to that, just because, as we were just discussing, the Western Conference is not full of world beaters there. And I think you can sneak into one of those two wild card spots in the West. The Avalanche are a mess though right now. I mean, this is a team that they can't get a save from either Philip Grubauer or Semyon Varlamov. We heard Sam Reinhart have to apologize the other day for saying that the Sabres need more out of their goaltenders, but things are just going wrong there. And I think for the Sabres, it's a little bit easier to stomach not making the playoffs, because I think Jason Botterill and Phil Housley understand that team might be a year away from being ready to contend, that this is maybe a bit soon. Colorado is a team that should have been set up to be a playoff team, should have been in, looked like it as of December 7th, and then the bottom's fallen out. Goaltending's been terrible. There's no confidence in that room. I mean, they were just in Washington, and we got to talk to them, and it just feels like a down, beaten group that every time a mistake happens, the puck winds up in their net, and just things are snowballing out of control for the Avalanche. But if I'm putting money on either one of those teams to make it, it's Colorado. But I'm not feeling confident about either one of those teams in the playoffs.
Steven Wino covers the NHL for the Associated Press. Steven, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for joining us this morning.
No problem, guys. Talk to you soon.
Take care, Steven. When we come back, we look ahead to tomorrow afternoon's Jets-Sabres game, the second half of the back-to-back. We talk about Sam Reinhart's controversial comments about his team's goaltending. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Too many defensive breakdowns. What happened defensively that they were able to get so many wide-open looks?
Too many mistakes. I mean, we can't expect to win hockey games 6-7, of course, 6-5, 7-6. We need more from our goalies, and we need it from the start of hockey games. It's frustrating.
You look at
that was Buffalo Sabres forward Sam Reinhart. Some harsh, but I would suggest fair commentary about the team's goaltending after their defeat at the hands of the Carolina Hurricanes earlier this week. Of course, in walking back those comments, as you knew he would.
Hold on. You mean, first of all, we had a player being honest,
absolutely, that's a good thing. But, you know, the next day when he was asked about his comments again, mm-hmm. because they are critical about teammates, he doesn't stand by the comments. He doesn't apologize and say, maybe I was frustrated and in the heat of the moment I said something I should have. He said his comments were lost in translation.
Because English is a tough language.
He spoke English there. There was no translation. There was no translator
actually
involved.
Yes, many people that don't speak English find it very hard to learn.
That's a good point.
Yes. Dave is incorrect on that one there, but as he's correct. But his comments weren't lost in translation. His comments were clear. They were honest. And just, I mean, it was great. I love that he said that they were lost in translation. Like, he was taken out of context. No, you heard the question. You heard the answer. It was pretty straightforward.
I like Sam Reinhart as a player. I mean, he's having a nice year. He's got 49 points in 53 games on the season. But, boy, did he really throw his goalies under the bus. I mean, you know, you think about, you know, when you're talking about, you know, throwing guys under the bus, I mean, that was obviously a game in which the Buffalo Sabres could have won, but You can't say stuff like that to the media after the games. And, you know, even though, you know, I think, you know, you guys would agree Carter Hutton and Linus Ullmark have had their struggles this year.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't say that So I think that's something that, you know, I agree with Dave. He should have apologized for.
Yeah, just apologize for it. Don't say it was lost in translation.
No, I think you're right.
It wasn't lost in translation. You were just being honest.
Yeah, and the reality is, like, I think you hit it on the head. You look, I was frustrated. You know, it's not just the goalies. I didn't mean to isolate them.
Yeah.
We all aren't playing well, and we need to get it on back on track. But, I mean, like, look, he's not wrong. When you're giving up that many goals, I mean, it's not necessarily just always on the goalies. I mean, I suspect, and we don't watch a lot of Sabres games, so it's hard to say, but I would suspect it has to do with the defensive structure, the way of the play of the forwards. You know, teams win and lose as a group. You know, you can't just say, well, it's always on one player. I mean, sometimes it is if a goalie is having a particularly bad game. But the fact of the matter is, you know, there's something that's porous about the Sabres right now. And so as a result, it's a collective team result. And I think, like we just talked about, he's clearly frustrated. But I just can't stand when a guy makes a comment and he has to walk him back. You know, it just doesn't, like, to me, it's like, okay, you made a comment and you were angry. And you're at heat of the moment. And so now you just say, look, and you explain it like that. But to explain it the other way, you know, I mean, you're from North Vancouver. So, I mean, like, it's not exactly like
you're not speaking Swedish.
Right.
It was a pretty clear comment you made. You know, honest. That's fine. Stand by it. Don't say,
Dave,
you know,
how's the English in South Vancouver?
Oh, I don't know. Because there is no South Vancouver.
Really?
No, that's just Vancouver.
No, they go West Vancouver. They have Vancouver.
Yeah. South Vancouver. Isn't that Richmond?
Well, but yeah, but that's Richmond. That's not South Vancouver.
I know, but that's
south of Vancouver.
South of Vancouver.
No, they just have west, north, and, which is weird because I think they're like basically beside each other. And then there's Vancouver. That's it. And
like Dave, West Vancouver, English Bay.
That's like to make it more local.
Yeah,
there's a West Kildonan. There's a North Kildonan.
Yeah.
There's an East Kildonan.
And an Old Kildonan.
There's an Old Kildonan.
There's no new Kildonan.
But there's no South Kildonan.
There's no South Kildonan.
I'm glad we really clarified that. This is riveting radio, let me tell you.
I know North End Rick and a few other of my North End brethren would find it interesting.
They certainly would. Anyways, welcome. You are listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets, of course, have a second half of a back-to-back. They're into Buffalo tomorrow to meet the Sabres team that has obviously been struggling as of late. You remember, I mean, go back to October and November. The Sabres came here into Winnipeg as part of that great winning streak they were on, where it looked like the Buffalo Sabres were going to be a bit of a juggernaut in the Eastern Conference. I think they won at that point in time 10 games in a row, and then they came to Winnipeg. They won in a shootout, and then really since then, Connor Sheary scored that shootout winner. I think it was a 16-shooter, an 8-round shootout, if I recall correctly, back earlier this season. But the Sabre season has really fallen off the rails since they started like a house on fire. Now you got players sniping at goaltenders, and it's turning from bad to worse for Phil Housley's club there in Buffalo. It'll be the second half of a back-to-back tomorrow for both teams as the Sabres have an afternoon contest as well. This segment of the show is brought to you by our friends at Keener Jerseys, located at 982 Portage Avenue. At Keener Jerseys, making a better jersey is just what they do. To have your jersey personalized or to order new jerseys, maybe you need new hoodies or you want some hoodies for your rec team as well, they all do it at Keener Jerseys. Check them out, KeenerJerseys.com. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
Seems like every week we have a different jersey to talk about, but that Lightning jersey, not good.
The gray on black or whatever it is?
No, it was black on black.
Black on black, yeah. It's an interesting look. It's a unique look.
I actually don't even mind it.
It's unique, so if
you
like...
It looked way too Oakland Raiders-ish.
Well, I don't mind the Raiders. What do you have against the Raiders logo?
No, I'm just saying...
Wait, Oakland, or is it San Francisco?
I don't think they're
or...
going for that look.
It's a unique jersey. You don't often see that from an NHL club. I would agree with that. But let's get
you
back to the...
You couldn't even see the logo.
Well, I think that's the point of it for whatever reason.
Don't you want to see the logo?
I don't fully understand the logic behind it. It's, I mean, beauty in the eye of the beholder sort of thing.
They're in
but
first place, so I guess they can do whatever.
Yeah,
whatever
they're not even in first place by a little bit. They're in first place by a country mile in the NHL. They're just, nobody's talking about the Lightning because they've been so good, far and away the best team in the NHL all season long. It's sort of amusing. But this Buffalo Sabres team, like I said, they're really in a dogfight right now. That loss to the Carolina Hurricanes this week was a big one in that the Hurricanes have now put some space between themselves and the Sabres. They're 3 points ahead of the Sabres, although the Sabres do have those two games in hand. Again, it's sort of going to be similar to what the Jets see against Ottawa this afternoon, in that the Sabres score a fair number of goals, but they give up a lot of goals in return, so the Jets have to be aware of that. They can't get into a run and gun situation. You know, you sort of have to be right in your positioning, right in your style of game, as Paul Maurice talks about a lot in both of these next two games, which is sort of, I guess, a blessing in disguise in that both teams are loose defensively, but you have to not get sucked into that style of play.
Right. And, you know, when you're talking about the Buffalo Sabres, we talked about the goaltending, and, you know, Carter Hutton is obviously the number one goaltender there, and, you know, he's had good games. He's been good, I would say, but not great, and Linus Ullmark has not, I think, really accepted and stepped into that role, I should say, like they expected, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, he is a good goaltender. I think, you know, Ullmark, I think, you know, is a guy that sometimes people think it can't be an NHL backup goaltender, a steady backup goaltender, but certainly the goaltending, I think, has left a little bit to be desired. But the Sabres team actually hasn't been, you know, as bad defensively as you would think, and part of that has to do with, you know, Rasmus Dahlin, you know, standout rookie, has obviously helped them transition out of their own zone. But, you know, I think the Sabres are similar to a lot of teams right now, a lot of average teams in the NHL, in that they have a great top line with Jeff Skinner, Jack Eichel, and Jason Pominville, and you've got Casey Mittelstadt there, another rookie centering that second line with Connor Sheary and the aforementioned Sam Reinhart. But really, you know, you see the fall off there on the third and fourth lines. Kyle Okposo has not had a great year. You just don't have a lot of scoring there. You know, guys like Evan Rodriguez and Vladimir Sobotka, Tage Thompson, another rookie. You know, Patrick Berglund, obviously, you know, earlier this season decided to retire. So, I mean, they've had quite a bit of turnover there, just not a lot of scoring. Like I mentioned, I mean, you get, you know, Jeff Skinner having a career year. Jack Eichel, I think, you know, is having a very underrated year, point per game, over a point per game player. And, you know, this team, I think, still in it, still has a chance at making the playoffs. But when you're talking
about... turn it around now, though.
Well, yeah, and you talked about, you know, how since the 10-game winning streak,
yeah,
and since they came into Winnipeg, I mean, they've really fallen... You know, further down the standings, but you
well,
know,
since 2019, so since the calendar rolled over, the Buffalo Sabres are the 28th place team in the NHL with a record of 5-8-1, 11 points in 14 games since the calendar rolled over. That's tied with the Ottawa Senators. The only teams that are worse are the Anaheim Ducks and the Colorado Avalanche. So I mean, they have been a bad hockey team for the last, you know, 5 or 6 weeks or so.
Right, guys, and you know, I want to get Dave in here, but you know, Sam Reinhart, his comments, I think, are a function, I believe, of this team's youth. And, you know, we mentioned, you know, Casey Mittelstadt, a rookie playing that second line center role. We know how hard it is, guys. You know, Brian Little, you know, has been criticized, you know, that he's more suited to be a third line center, which I don't necessarily agree with, because I think Little is having a very nice year. But, you know, Casey Mittelstadt, you know, has had a good year, but it's very hard when you're facing other teams' top lines. And, you know, you go up and down the lineup, you know, Rasmus Dahlin, you know, in his first year, even though he's had a nice year, but you've got a lot of young players in this lineup, and you know, you start to see it in the inexperience in games, how they handle situations. We saw it the other night with the Carolina Hurricanes, mm-hmm. you know, giving up a lot of odd man rushes, giving up 6 goals, and you know, the Sabres are going to be in tough, because when you're trying to you know, pass a team like the Boston Bruins or, you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins or the Hurricanes, who are surging right now, it's going to be tough. So, you know, the games coming up this weekend aren't going to be easy. Anytime you have back-to-back, and as we talked about, the Sabres have a lot of skill, but you know, right now they're floundering a little bit.
When we come back, Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News joins us to talk more about the Jets' opponent tomorrow afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN 1290. The Jets and the Senators, 1 o'clock puck drop this afternoon in the nation's capital. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
After this afternoon's Jets contest in Ottawa, they're going to get on the plane and head to Buffalo, upstate New York, is where we go to be joined by Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News. Mike, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Drew. Yeah, it's a back-to-back matinee weekend in Buffalo here.
Yes, absolutely. Mike, we have to start with going back to Thursday night and the comments made by Sam Reinhart after the Buffalo Sabres drop a 6-5 overtime defeat to the Carolina Hurricanes. He's quite critical about the Sabres' goaltending as of late, only to the next day try and walk it back by saying his comments were somehow lost in translation. From being on the ground in Buffalo and watching this team night in and night out, how accurate were Sam Reinhart's comments?
Oh, I think they were completely accurate. This team has been terrible defensively, and they have not been good in net. The last three games, Carter Hutton and Linus Ullmark have combined to give up 17 goals. Reinhart spoke what was on his mind, but obviously shouldn't have said what he said, that we have to get more from the goaltending right from the beginning of the game. Did he misspeak? I think he spoke from the heart. It came out badly. It was a bad look. He knew he shouldn't have done it when he was told what he said. He said, well, I didn't really mean that. No, I think he did. But everybody did their mea culpas yesterday, and the previous night he had texted the goalies. They're all fine. But I just think ultimately the goaltending in this team has to be better. He's not wrong.
Now, Mike, obviously one of the best stories on the Sabres this year is Jeff Skinner. He's up to 33 goals on the season, and it was apropos that he scored a couple of goals against his old team, the Carolina Hurricanes, Thursday night. And you know, obviously he's an unrestricted free agent after this season. What's the latest, though, on Skinner? I don't think anyone is expecting him to be traded before the trade deadline, but is there a chance that we'll see a contract extension anytime soon?
There's no chatter going on about it at all. You don't hear any rumblings. I know they're talking, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens as we approach the deadline here. If the Sabres continue to fall out of the race, if there doesn't seem to be a lot of progress, are they willing to risk losing him in free agency? Would they have to move him? I think that could go right to the end here. They need to see, I think, some progress in the negotiations, but this is a situation Jeff Skinner really likes. He likes being on Jack Eichel's wing. He likes being near his home in suburban Toronto. I really think it's the ideal place for him. But they got to get a deal done, and it's not going to be cheap.
Mike, it wasn't just Sam Reinhart who was walking back his comments. You asked Phil Housley, the coach in Buffalo, point blank, if this defensive core is remotely good enough, and his response to you is that that's Jason's job. Now, I understand from another tweet later from you that he walked that back. But do you think it's symptomatic of just the frustration that's boiling over in Buffalo right now?
Yeah, I really think Thursday was a frustrating night. They were down two goals twice to Carolina, came back twice, including a Skinner goal in the last minute, and they lose in overtime. And you know, it was not one of Housley's better nights. I mean, Jeff Skinner scores two goals against his old team, including the tying goal, 55 seconds left, and you don't play him the first 3 minutes in overtime. I mean, are you kidding me? You can't be serious. You know, and he doesn't like Skinner defensively in 3-on-3. Connor Sheary's got two goals since Thanksgiving. And he runs him out there at the start overtime. It's just really inconceivable to me. And I think Housley was frustrated. And I think Housley, again, spoke the truth.
Mike Herring.
Jason Botterill has to do a better job getting some people in here defensively. And then Housley had to walk back what he said because the general manager got mad. That wasn't what I meant. I thought someone was asking about Rochester. No one was asking about Rochester. He knew darn well what he was saying.
Mike Harrington is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike, of course, covers the Buffalo Sabres as a columnist for the Buffalo News. Mike, the trade deadline, you know, we talked about it with Jeff Skinner. That's a little more than a couple weeks away. Could the team be, you know, how are they approaching that deadline, being that they're out of a playoff spot right now? They would need to go on a run. We've seen them be able to go on a run earlier this year when they won 10 games in a row. Are they just sort of right now between a bit of a rock and a hard place when it comes to that trade deadline?
They are. I mean, they're not out of it. They're only 4 points out, but maybe they are out of it. They haven't won 2 games in a row since mid-December. But maybe they're not out of it because they won 10 in a row in November, and you know they're capable of getting on a run. I really think they need to add for this team right now. They need to make the playoffs. They haven't made the playoffs since 2011. They need to get that experience. And I don't care if you get blown out in 5 games in the first round by Tampa Bay. You need to get in the playoffs. Here's a stat for you guys. There are 8 players on this roster who have played more than 250 games in the NHL who have never played a playoff game. The top 2 players in the league for most career games without making the playoffs are on this team, and Jeff Skinner and Zach Bogosian. They need to make the playoffs and get playoff experience. If you ever want to go deep in the playoffs, you can't just show up and one day be in the cup final. Look at the Jets. The Jets derived a tremendous amount of experience just from making the playoffs that one year against Anaheim. You know, you have to do this incrementally, and the Sabres simply not making the playoffs every year, they're never going to get anywhere as a franchise.
You know, Mike, it's hard to believe, but it's been almost 4 years since Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian were traded to Buffalo in that blockbuster trade. And I don't know if you saw this, but in the game last weekend against Anaheim, 5 goals were scored against players that were directly linked to that trade. Jack Roslovic, of course, was the first-round pick, scored the hat-trick. Tyler right. Myers scored a goal. Brendan Lemieux also scored a goal. The question I have for you is, in Buffalo, you're there, you're on the street, as Drew mentioned. Are people still talking about how bad of a trade that was for Buffalo?
No. They don't talk about that trade being a bad trade at all. Evander Kane had 3 really good years here. Bogosian's been really good this year after he had hip surgery. The trade everybody in Buffalo talks about as being a bad trade is dumping Ryan O'Reilly to St. Louis this year.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bad trade.
Right.
The Evander Kane trade has never been looked at. You know, the number one pick, people don't look at it that Jack Roslovic would play for the Sabres because you don't know who the Sabres would have drafted with that pick. I don't really think people look at the Evander Kane trade as a bad trade at all here.
You know, Mike, sometimes instead of looking across the league, we look down to the AHL, and the Rochester Americans are the top team right now in their division. You've got some nice pieces down there, but are the Sabres more inclined to leave those guys down there and allow them to mature? And specifically, a player like Victor Olofsson, who's come over and playing his first year pro over here in North America, and he's having a really good season for a seventh-round pick.
Yeah, and he had a hat trick last night. I would have liked to have seen Olofsson here weeks ago, but I think you're right. I think they really would like to keep the Rochester Amerks together. And again, kind of like what I just said with the Sabres, they would like the Amerks to go on a Calder Cup run. The Rochester Amerks have not won a playoff series since 2005. And they would like to see these guys get a lot of experience, play hockey deep into May, maybe even into June. So I think those guys may stay there. They really feel they have a shot to do it this year. And it would be a good thing for Olofsson and Rasmus Asplund and Brendan Gooley, their defense prospect, to get that experience. I think that team may stay together.
Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the Sabres ahead of the Jets and Sabres contest tomorrow afternoon. Mike, in that previous answer about the Rochester Americans, you didn't mention Alex Nylander. This is a guy who was a top 10 pick, 8th overall a few years back in 2016. He's got a handful of games with Buffalo, but the majority of his time in the last 3 years is at that AHL level. What's happening with his development, and is there concern about Nylander in the organization?
His development is slow. There's my answer. You know, you look at the guys who've been taken in the top 10 of that draft in 2016, and most of them are already contributing heavily in the NHL. Now, I'm not writing Nylander off yet by any stretch, and I think a good long playoff run would really help a guy like Nylander. We're getting close to the point where they're going to have to make a decision. Keep Nylander, trade Nylander. You know, he's got to be a regular NHL player next season. But ultimately, if that pick doesn't work out, Tim Murray, the former GM, blew the number 8 overall pick when the draft was in his building.
Mm-hmm.
And he took Alex Nylander instead of Jeff Chychrun, instead of Charlie McAvoy, and instead of Mikhail Sergachev. Gee, I think any of those three defensemen might help the Sabres right now, huh?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mike, sticking with defensemen, we're 10 or minutes into the interview, and we haven't even talked about Rasmus Dahlin. How much of a treat is it to watch Dahlin on a nightly basis?
He makes 2 or 3 spectacular plays every night. He's going to be an incredible defenseman when he's 22 or 23. It's just shocking to me the things he can do at 18, and you think, what's he going to be like at 22 or 23? You're going to see the kind of development you saw with Victor Hedman in Tampa. When we covered the Stanley Cup final in 2015, Victor Hedman was still kind of scratching the surface, heading on that Norris trajectory. Now here we are 4 years later, and Victor Hedman is basically Victor Hedman. Dahlin's there already offensively. Defensively, he's 18. He needs work. Some days he gets out-muscled. Some days he puts the puck in the wrong spot. The best thing I could say about Dahlin defensively is when he makes a mistake, oftentimes he gives the puck away. He goes and gets it back, like on the same shift, like 5 or 10 seconds later. His ability to recover from a mistake quickly is really fascinating to watch for a young player, and it doesn't linger from shift to shift at all. And that's something that I think is really impressive.
You know, Mike, you talked about the fact that the Sabres team hasn't made the playoffs, you know, seven straight seasons now of not seeing playoff hockey in Buffalo. What's the fan base's reaction? And we know fan bases sometimes can be crazy, but, I mean, for the fan base in Buffalo, it seems they've been rather patient. They've seen that there was a rebuild in Buffalo. How are they handling this team right now?
The patience is running out. And let me tell you something, guys. If the Carolina Hurricanes make the playoffs this year, the patience is really going to be expired because they have the longest drought in the league dating of 2009. If they make the playoffs this year, the Buffalo Sabres will have the longest playoff drought in the NHL, and that will not sit well with anyone, all the way from ownership through the fan base. They will absolutely have to make the playoffs next season if they have the longest drought. Because we just went through this as a city, guys. Understand. The Bills had the longest playoff drought in the NFL. Mm-hmm. They went 17 years. They finally snuck in last season, you know, basically snuck in for one wild card game for what it was worth. But they did get in, and now if the Sabres have the longest drought in the NHL, that's just not going to play well.
Last question for you, Mike, and to circle back to the goaltending, it's sort of a two-part question. One, do we know how Phil Housley is going to deploy his goaltenders in today's matinee against the Red Wings and then tomorrow's matinee against the Jets? And then second of all, you wrote earlier in the week that it's time, in your Buffalo News column, you wrote that it's time for the Sabres to turn the goaltending crease over to Linus Ullmark. Why do you believe that to be the case?
Well, I just think that Carter Hutton has been terrible for about a month or more. They can't give up a bad goal every night, and that's what Carter Hutton's doing. I think he needs to reset his game mentally and physically, and I think this weekend Housley's going to announce today in about half an hour who's playing today, and then the other guy is going to play tomorrow. Housley's already announced he's splitting these two games. So I don't know which way they're going to go. Ullmark wasn't very good the other night. He gave up six goals against Carolina, but five of them were tap-ins or breakaways. I don't know exactly what he was supposed to do, which is why it made Reinhardt's comments a little ill-timed and bizarre. But, you know, the goaltending's got to be better. Both guys are at 909. Ullmark's at 306. Hutton's at 286. You got to make saves. Even on high-danger chances, they got to get some saves for this club, and that's what they're not getting right now.
Mike Harrington is a columnist for the Buffalo News. He covers the Buffalo Sabres. The Jets into Buffalo tomorrow afternoon to meet the Sabres. Mike, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
All right, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Take care,
Mike. When we come back, we look at the latest edition of the TSN Trade Bait Board. We are a little more than 2 weeks and 2 days away from the NHL trade deadline. We recap what's going on in the trade market. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Kevin Hayes, to me, should be a player that Minnesota or a team like Winnipeg should be looking at. I mean, just everything he brings, I think he'd fit nicely in that conference.
TSN hockey insider Darren Dreger earlier this week appearing on TSN 690 in Montreal talking up the possibility of Kevin Hayes being an acquisition for the Winnipeg Jets. I think it'd be less possible about the Minnesota Wild. I don't see them as buyers now, obviously, since the Mikko Koivu injury. It's amazing how quickly things can change. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For freshly made and fresh frozen foods delivered right to your door, visit shopbernsteins.com. And of course, if you're looking for a place to get breakfast this morning, given that we've been on air for now 2 hours and 20 minutes and yet it's only 9:20 in the morning, Bernstein's Deli would be our high recommendation for a solid breakfast spot this morning. TSN Trade Bait Board, I guess it is two weeks and 2 days until the deadline. We will be live on air that Monday night.
Yep.
A special edition of NHL this week as part of our day-long coverage here on the station on what should be a very busy day in the NHL among the trade topics. You know, people thought that maybe there's been a couple moves this week, and the Brian Boyle move to Nashville was the big one.
Yep.
But it does seem like the market is still sort of clogged up, waiting to see what happens with Panarin, what happens with Duchesne, what happens with Stone, you know, what happens maybe even with a guy like Wayne Simmonds. you know, until that breaks through, until that, you know, comes to fruition, it seems like everybody's in a bit of a holding pattern. Unless you want to be the team that, you know, like Nashville, that strikes early, and maybe they paid a little more than they should have for Brian Boyle. To me, it doesn't feel that way. I mean, I'm okay with giving up a late second round pick for Brian Boyle as a rental and striking early rather than waiting to see what the market sort of sets the price at.
Right. And, you know, further to your point, I mean, it's setting up to be a very active trade deadline, I think. And, you know, you saw earlier this week Artemi Panarin changed agents.
Mm-hmm. That's weird right now, isn't it? Well, that happened last night.
He switched to Bobrovsky's agent.
Yeah, the Panarin switches from his agent to Bobrovsky's agent at this late stage of the game.
And it's not weird if you consider that, you know, these two players could be packaged up in a deal, right?
Hear,
you know, a team like the Florida Panthers could be interested. I'm sure there are other teams as well. But not weird if you consider that there are going to be new contracts negotiated, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, why not have, you know, the same agent? He obviously has his own reasons, but at this point, guys, I just don't know why the Columbus Blue Jackets would hang on to Panarin. If you're going to lose Panarin for nothing just to keep him for a playoff run that I don't think is going to be a long playoff run, I just don't think the Blue, and again, I mentioned this earlier in the show, you know, saw the Blue Jackets in Phoenix against the Coyotes, and the Blue Jackets were at times just toying with the Coyotes. They ended up winning the game 4-2. It shouldn't have even been that close, but, you know, Panarin was clearly the best player on the ice. And sure, you have to get a player of equal value back, but isn't his value at an all-time high, Drew? Like, you could get a lot back for Panarin, and I think set yourself up better for the future. If you end up losing him for nothing, that's my own personal belief. I do think Panarin is going to be traded before the trade deadline. And when you're talking about Duchesne and Stone, you mentioned pending UFAs. Mm-hmm. Ottawa's not making the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Why would you hang on to these guys if you're not going to sign them? And you know, we still might see Duchesne or Stone sign. I think there's a good chance both of those guys are gone as well.
It seems to be trending in that direction. I mean, you heard Bob McKenzie. I don't know if you heard him on the Bobcast earlier this week on TSN.ca. But, you know,
I only listen to the Drewcast.
Okay, well, in any event, on the Bobcast, McKenzie was saying that it seems to be trending against Duchesne and Stone re-signing in Ottawa. And, of course, you know, that's going to cause a bomb in the nation's capital in terms of the reaction to Eugene Melnyk, again, letting talent, you know, albeit the talent has the option, but the talent is getting away from the Ottawa Senators.
I think Senators fans are really excited for Melnyk to spend money in 2031.
It was a bizarre. I mean, it was bizarre is just, I think, the slogan of the Ottawa Senators at this point in time, but you give this big corporate announcement in Toronto, of all places, and I know it was at the Hockey Hall of Fame, but you give this big announcement that, and you're only giving yourself, we're going to be competitive in 3 years, but we're only going to be competitive for 5 years years.
That's what most teams' windows are. I mean, if you're
you
really
come out and say that,
yeah, I don't mind it. I honestly don't have a problem with it being forthright. I think, you know, too often we have to listen to cliches and oh, we'll be a competitive team. No, you won't. Most teams don't have a lifespan of really longer than that 5 year window. So to me, I don't have a problem with those comments.
I guess the question is though, Dave, is Melnyk going to be the owner in 2021?
That's
right?
A good question.
I mean, if I'm Eugene Melnyk, I mean, again, we talked to Dean Brown about it, about the fan base and how, you know, they are handling, you know, his comments and throughout, you know, the arena saga and all the other situations that are going on in Ottawa. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I mean, he owns the product, and you know, unless he decides that he wants to sell, which I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, I suspect Eugene Melnyk will be the owner for quite some time.
A team like Carolina, which had Michael Ferland, is apparently walking out the door, as if what everyone expected, he was going to be sold, as part of a pending unrestricted free agent. Well, the Hurricanes are right now, you know, really tooth and nail for a playoff spot. Do you trade Michael Ferland right now? I mean, what message does that send, even though you're likely going to lose him for nothing at season's end? I mean, I know that there's a logjam, especially in the Western Conference, but let's be honest. I mean, I think the general managers should be smart enough to know that they're really, if they really truly are contenders or not. And I know I poo-poo the two home dates that some of these teams might get, as, you know, by just getting into the playoffs, but I mean, you can't.
Hold on a second. I think there's reason to poo-poo that, though.
Okay.
I mean, aside from the owners.
Yes.
Who cares if you get two playoff dates? I mean, if you're a fan of a team, I mean, the Buffalo Sabres and the Carolina Hurricanes are a different story because they've missed the playoffs for so many years. So if you're a Hurricanes fan, yeah, you're going to be happy with a couple of home playoff games. But I don't think the Carolina Hurricanes, the way they've played the last 2 weeks, should change whether or not you're going to trade Michael Ferland. And the reason for that, Drew, is because if you're not going to get anything back for Michael Ferland, if that's what you've decided,
yeah.
I think that's the wrong decision, right? Because, you know, Ferland's a great hockey player. I really like him. He's a guy that can score goals, can shoot the puck, he can drop the gloves. We know he's from Manitoba. You know, had a nice little stint with the Flames as well, but you have to get something back for him.
Sure.
I mean, you traded Elias Lindholm and you traded Noah Hanifin to acquire Ferland, Dougie Hamilton. And as far as I'm concerned, you've lost that trade big time. Lindholm has been
no question. Those
excellent
guys have been
on that top line.
Yeah.
So if you're going to keep Ferland now because you think you have a better shot at making the playoffs, but you're still going to lose him for nothing, I think that's the wrong choice.
Well, look, if you're Bob Murray in Anaheim and you have Jakob Silverberg as a pending unrestricted free agent.
If you're not going to sign him, trade him.
That's right. I mean, even though you are, the Ducks aren't on the cusp. I mean, they are, however many points out they are now, but the Ducks have been the worst team in the NHL since the new year. They're 4 points out. So, yeah, they are, I guess, theoretically still in it. But let's be honest, this Anaheim Ducks team, I mean, anybody that watches them play knows that they're not anything close to competitive.
Well, put it this way. Sorry, Dave. You can get in here in a second, but
of Ezzy to grant you permission for that.
Although, but would you rather get into the playoffs with a second round pick and no Ferland, or get into the playoffs with Ferland and then lose him for nothing? I mean, I think you take the second round pick, right?
Well, I mean, again, it depends on what your requirements are. And again, from an ownership perspective, sure, it's more money. Secondly, as Mike Harrington just talked about, it's an opportunity to give these guys that even if you're going to get demolished in a 5-game series, at least you're giving these guys a little bit of battle testing in the playoffs, which is, as we all know, and we talked about it a million times, is a way more intense atmosphere than you're ever going to get from any regular season game or any other type of game. I mean,
sure.
The playoffs are a different animal. So to me, it's a function of that. And I think, if you're sitting there and you're like, the irony is, remember how when Mark Bergevin, the GM of the Habs, was in town, watching the game, people were like, ooh, is there going to be a Montreal-Winnipeg trade? And I thought to myself, no, he's probably here to watch the Ducks.
Well,
and then
Cam
2 days
Fowler
later,
is the name.
No, and then 2 days later, he's in Toronto
watching
the Ducks again, which kind of confirms, obviously, that people are trying to pick over Anaheim and figure out what pieces they can pry out of the Anaheim organization.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think, Ezzy makes a very good point. I mean, from a perspective of a growth moving forward, I think like a Carolina, you're probably better off getting picks and losing out on a playoff run this year to maybe have a better opportunity in the future.
And Dave, you can still make the playoffs without Ferland. That's my point, right?
Right. Michael Ferland is a nice player, but he's not the world beater.
He's not going to help you win a series. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the Hurricanes, if they make the playoffs, I would be shocked if they got out of the first round.
Of course they wouldn't get out of the first round, but Michael Ferland is not going to be the determining factor if you make the playoffs or you don't make the playoffs.
Get a pick, whether it's a second rounder or maybe you get a prospect. I mean, it all depends, obviously, on if they're going to sign him. If they're going to sign him long term, but it sounds like they're not.
It sounds like there's been no progress on that front at all.
And to the Ezzy's idea, I mean, the fact is, you trade a player, it doesn't necessarily mean you fold up the tangent.
Did you just call him the Ezzy's?
No. As he just said.
Oh, okay. I thought you said.
I mean, we can have Sean play it back, but I'm fairly certain that's what I said.
Go on. Sorry, I interrupted.
So, to that point, I think we saw it in St. Louis. Now, obviously, they didn't make the playoffs after they traded Paul Stastny to the Jets.
But they made a run.
But they made a heck of a good run.
Yeah.
And they were very close, obviously.
Game 82.
Right. So my point is that Ezzy's point, which I agree with, just because a team makes a trade doesn't necessarily mean that you're folding up your tent and ready to go home. The fact is that, especially with the way that the NHL is, because there's so much parity, a.k.a. so many of these teams stink, the fact of the matter is that you can catch them. I mean, and if you go on a run, then, like we saw, like Mike talked about with the Sabres, what they did in November, any team that goes on a decent run right now has a good chance of making a push to get into the playoffs.
One of the players who's on the trade bait board that's interesting to me, who's not really getting talked about at all, who's a pending unrestricted free agent.
First round pick?
No, not Jets first round pick, because that's a thing, it's not a player. Is Gustav Nyquist of the Detroit Red Wings.
Yeah, good player.
This is a guy who's got just under a point a game this year, 46 points in 54 games played for the Detroit Red Wings. The Red Wings definitely are a seller. There's no chance that they can even be considered a fringe playoff team. A guy with a lot of playoff experience through the Red Wings organization. If you're looking for an under-the-radar player who can make an impact on a team, especially in a team's top six, or if you really want to shore up your top nine, Gustav Nyquist is the kind of guy who, I think you keep a close eye on.
Yeah, and you know the question becomes, what do you give up? Because I wouldn't give up a first-round pick. But when you're talking about a second-round pick, if it's going to be a late second-round pick and you're a team like the Nashville Predators or I think the Vegas Golden Knights make a lot of sense for Nyquist.
Well, they those two teams did business last year at the deadline with Thomas Tatar, of course.
And I don't necessarily know Nyquist would be a guy that plays in the top six in Vegas, but if you've got Nyquist on your third line.
It's one of those guys who can put up points. You know, he's got the playoff experience.
Yep.
And just one of those names to keep an eye on. That's a little under the radar when all the attention and all the oxygen is being taken up by Stone and Duchesne and Ferland and players like that. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Manitoba Moose. Our good friend Mitch Peacock is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. It's going to be a very busy Saturday here on the station. After us, of course, the afternoon ride. Hustler is going to be in. Rick Ralph, I believe, is on vacation. Then Kevin Owen, the pregame show ahead of the Jets and the Senators, which will lead straight into the postgame show, followed by Manitoba Moose Hockey, the Moose at home tonight to the Texas Stars. To talk more about the Manitoba Moose, let's go here from Mitch Peacock.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Manitoba Moose broadcaster Mitch Peacock joins us on the program now. Mitch, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
No, happy to be here, guys. Belated anniversary. Happy anniversary to you, I should say. And, lots of fun.
Thank you very much, Mitch. Nice to be back in Winnipeg.
Welcome home, Mitch.
Yeah, it's been
a while.
A long road trip for the Manitoba Moose, split up, of course, by the AHL All-Star Game. Not the most successful road trip that the Moose have ever had. I believe 1-3, 1-1, if I'm not mistaken. And then they dropped a really hard defeat in Grand Rapids on Wednesday night, where the Moose had a late 1-0 lead before they gave up two power play goals late in the third period. What was the mood in the dressing room and the mood in the team sort of after the game on Wednesday and then about the road trip as a whole?
Well, certainly Wednesday was very difficult to swallow for the team. Grand Rapids, the first place team in the Central Division. They're one of the dominant teams on home ice in the American Hockey League. And for more than 58 minutes, the Manitoba Moose had played evenly, if not a little bit better than their opponent, and had a 1-0 lead and thought they were on their way to a really important victory to end that road trip and to set up the homestand. And the next thing they knew, really in the blink of an eye, they were coming off of the ice with a loss and no points at all to even show for a very good effort. So that one was tough to take, and I think that the players are trying to take what they can from it in terms of maybe mistakes on their part and also accepting that circumstances are sometimes out of your control. There was two calls made in the last couple of minutes there that put the team in a very unusual situation where they were actually down 6-on-3 trying to hold on to the 1-0 lead. And, that's pretty tough to deal with, especially with the weapons Grand Rapids has. So they all of a sudden found themselves tied 1-1 and then still a man short. And with 25 seconds left, they gave up the goal that cost them the hockey game. So I think that they were, willing to accept ownership for their part in it and also understanding of the fact that if they had a chance to look at the calls afterwards and get a sense that maybe the referee didn't have the best of judgments in at least one of the calls and maybe both of them at the end of the game. So they're trying to just, own the part that they can own and get ready for this homestand and trying to build on what's been a very good home record this season against another Central Division opponent when, that every point matters so much right now in the playoff race. As far as the road trip as a whole is concerned, guys, I think that they feel like they played some good games, but I think they feel like they didn't get the points from them that they needed to. So there's a comfort level in the sense that they're doing a lot of things right, but there's also an understanding that things need to get a little bit better because they're not getting points for their efforts, and they need the points to stay in the playoff race. Marty Johnston, assistant coach with the team, was saying earlier this week, there's no doubt the American Hockey League gets more intense and faster coming out of the holiday break. There's also no doubt that the league takes another step up coming out of the All-Star break, and they're trying to call on the guys to make that step along with the league to see if they can stay in the mix here.
Mitch, obviously, you mentioned it, it was a tough road trip for the Manitoba Moose. You watch this game, you watch this team night in and night out, and do you still get amazed by how well Seth Griffith and Logan Shaw play together? Because all season long, these two veteran hockey players have been so consistent for Pascal Vincent and the Moose.
Yeah, they're obviously critical components to a team that doesn't score very much, especially when they've been able to help a power play to be pretty consistent. When you don't get the 5-on-5 scoring, then you do need the power play more than ever. And I think those guys have been very strong in helping with offensive production, with setting an example as well. I know it's experienced a couple of players in a group that maybe is a little shy on experience. So they've been valuable not only in terms of their on-ice work, but also in the way that they handle themselves in and around the team. And I think that, there's an appreciation within the organization for what they've been able to do. Griffith, especially, I would say, production-wise, in the last little while, he had that 11-game point streak going into the game in Grand Rapids on Wednesday night. And, that's his best run as a member of the Manitoba Moose, and it's coming at an important time of the year for the team. I think that he was trying to find that consistency a little bit prior to being injured late in the fall and heading into the holiday break, but he certainly found a level here that's been really, really important to the team. And Shaw's been rock steady all the way along since being signed from San Diego.
You know, Mitch, I seem to be talking about him every time we watch a Moose game because Eric Comrie, to me, has been the team MVP the way he's played, faced the most shots in the AHL by a significant number. His save percentage is, I think, the third best in the AHL. He's got a pretty decent goals against. I mean, is enough being mentioned or talked about outside of, the folks who cover the Moose about what Eric Comrie has managed to do this season?
I don't know if he's getting the recognition, from outside our circles, the Moose circles, the Jet circles. I don't think there's any doubt within the organization. They recognize what he's done this year. It's clearly his best year as a professional. He's clearly an elite number one goaltender in the American Hockey League. He's taken the opportunity that he's been given. There's no other guy around this year in terms of, someone with experience. There's no Hellebuck. There's no Pavlik. There's no Hutchinson. It's his team. He's the number three in the organization. And I would say what he's done is he's found a place mentally that's allowed him to perform at another level. And he says it has a lot to do with being able to stay in the moment. He's not allowing himself to get into what-ifs and maybes and, wonder about this and that sort of stuff, whether it's within the game or whether it's about the bigger picture of where his career is going. His focus is on, as he likes to say, stopping the next puck. And it's kind of cliche, but he's been able to do it. And the interesting thing is, guys, you get kind of spoiled watching his level of performance this year to where you think it's going to happen automatically every night. And there was a game last Saturday in Chicago where he let in a couple of goals that were not characteristic of the goals he's allowed this year. And you could see that the team was not, really in a position to win the hockey game as a result. So I guess what I'm getting at is his level, as high as it's been, has been absolutely vital to the Moose having the opportunities to win hockey games, collecting points, and staying in the playoff race. He has just been, as you suggested, the MVP without a doubt. And, they go into the game tonight 9 points behind fourth place Rockford with four games at hand on Rockford with that last playoff spot that they're targeting. And I don't think there's any way they'd be anywhere near that if it wasn't for Eric Comrie.
Manitoba Moose broadcaster Mitch Peacock is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The Moose host the Texas Stars tonight, the first on a 6-game homestand. You can hear that game live here on TSN Radio 1290. It follows the Winnipeg Jets and Ottawa Senators contest. Mitch, Logan Stanley has been, pretty much night in, night out, a consistent force on the Manitoba Moose blue line this season. From the start of the year until now, how have you seen Stanley's game change or grow throughout the course of the year?
Well, that's a tough one because I think that his strength is his simplicity. And I think that, it's something that's almost easy to take for granted because he doesn't make end-to-end dashes or, slick behind-the-back passes or, deek people out or that sort of thing. So the eye-catching stuff, the stuff that's easy to pick up on, is really not a part of what he does. And what he does so well is all the basic things that you need to do to be successful as a professional. He gets back and gets on the puck. He finds the people that are available and distributes the puck. He gets up the ice and supporting them. He reads plays well in terms of making decisions whether to support an attack or be prepared to defend. He takes people out physically without running around. He really minimizes risk, and I think he really develops, is quick to earn trust in coaching staff so because of the way that he handles himself. And he loves the responsibility. If you put him on the power play, he'll learn it, he'll figure it out, and he'll try and make a contribution. He's been good on the penalty kill right from the start of the year. I think he's hungry to be a good player. He's a very team-oriented guy. He doesn't walk around like somebody who thinks he should be somewhere else. So I think there's a lot of good components to his game. And I think that what he's done is he's just gotten more and more strong in his areas of excellence throughout the year. Now, that said, I would say that in recent games we've seen him have his minutes cut with the defense core being maybe a little bit deeper. And also I think maybe Logan running out of gas a little bit or being challenged to deal with how the league is stepping up as the season's gone on. We've seen the minutes shaved a bit and seen him more in a third pairing role as opposed to a first pairing role. But that could be something that's just something that happens in the ups and downs of the season. I don't think it's an acknowledgement of a step back in any way. And I think this grind is a different grind than he's ever seen before. So there's a lot of learning going on, and there's certainly room to grow for him. But what a good foundation he has. And I think the big part of that foundation to me, outside of the sort of physical attributes, is just the mindset. I think that he's a really diligent young guy and a really willing learner, and I think it's going to do him well.
Mitch, as you know, that 2015 draft is talked about a lot with Kyle Connor, Jack Roslovic, Sammy Niku, Mason Appleton, all players that have come up through the Moose system. And Jansen Harkins is a guy who you know is kind of forgotten, in my opinion. He was a second rounder in that 2015 draft in Florida. And you know, Dave Manuk, who watches the Moose a lot more than I do, tells me that Jansen Harkins has really improved this year. He's up to 9 goals on the season. What have you seen maybe a little bit different about Jansen Harkins' game, obviously putting the puck in the net a little bit more this year? But this is a guy that clearly is having a much better year than he did last year.
He is, without question. And I think he would tell you that last year was really valuable for him in terms of just developing an understanding of sort of what the life is of being a professional hockey player, understanding, you know, living on his own and understanding the schedule and the ebbs and flows of the year and dealing with energy levels and all of those sorts of things. So I think that was a really important year for him. You can almost disregard the stats side of it for him and look at it as a year where he was exposed to it all, got an understanding of it all, and then could go home in the summer, focus on some keys, get himself ready, come back with that knowledge from the first year, and then just kind of, if nothing else, guys, just be himself more. And I mean, not on a personal level as much as just as a hockey player. He could let his abilities come out. And that's what we've seen. Good straight ahead speed, a really good shot that he's worked a lot on, over the last, I don't know, 8-10 months, to where he, you know, they're trying to get him into shooting positions, or get him the puck in shooting positions so that he can let it go, because he has proven to be a really, really strong shooter at this level, at least. And I think with Jansen, what's happened, is that he's also reached a point in his experience and in his maturity that he said, you know what, I can be a difference maker with this team. I can be a difference maker at this level. And it sort of energized his play. Instead of trying to, you know, survive games or not make mistakes in games, he's looking at it more as, how can I help here? How can I make things better for this team? And you know, maybe I can do things that will make a difference. And so I think that's really changed his whole sort of impact and his whole energy that he brings to the team. And right now he's been bumped up onto that top line with Spacek and Lapone. And then Pascal Vincent said before the game on Wednesday night, when he was talking about Marco Dano moving on with Shaw and Griffith and Harkins going up with Spacek and Lapone, he was saying that, you know, we see Marco and Jansen as guys who can be moved back and forth in those top two lines, because, you know, they're both guys who can make a difference at the top end of our lineup. And I think that's pretty high praise, and I think it's also a credit to where he's brought his game.
You know, Mitch, as the team broadcaster, you've called, you know, a lot of goals here, but have you called a weirder one than that J.C. Lapone shorthanded goal in Chicago?
I don't think that I have. You know, it was one of those things, you know, I was sure what I saw, but I couldn't believe it. You know, J.C. Lapone got the puck in his own end. They were shorthanded. They were trailing 2-1. And he got the puck in his own end in the faceoff circle to the left of the Moose net. And all he wanted to do was get it down the ice because they were short. So he wrists the puck down the ice, and it's, you know, it's got a little bit of lift to it, but not a lot. It gets down to the end, hits the end boards. Oscar Dansk is the goaltender for the Wolves, and he's standing in his crease, not quite with his right skate up against the right post. And he reaches out with his stick, which is on that near side, flips the blade over and reaches back for the puck like he's just going to stop it and leave it to the side of the net. And as he puts the stick out, the puck deflects off the back of the stick, goes off the back of his leg and in behind him. And I could see it right the broadcast position was just in such a spot that I could see the puck had crossed the line. Dansk went flipping back like a sea, a lot of water, trying to get himself on top of that puck so that it wouldn't cross the line. But there was no question that it crossed the line. They took a quick peek at it, I think, on video to be sure. But it was one of those things where the Moose had shot the puck up the ice and then were pursuing it just to try and limit the breakout for the Wolves. And by the time they got to the crease, they were celebrating a goal. It was absolutely bizarre. But credit to Dance because he bounced back from that and was okay the rest of the game. I don't know many guys who would have been able to get over that.
You know, Mitch, just quickly, you know, part of the fun about the Manitoba Moose organization is some of the nights that they have. Obviously, tonight is a multicultural night they're hosting. Tomorrow's the Polar Bear Jersey Day. Just how much excitement is there around the organization for these types of events that they can put on for the fans?
Well, you know, players often talk about the long grind of the season and how you've got to play all of these games and there's this travel and, you know, it's really demanding and there's no question it is and it can wear on people. And I think it's really important for the players to have a little bit of a variety in the atmosphere and the arena and the energy in the building. And I think that, you know, for fans, it's energizing as well because if you're not just coming to a hockey game, but there's a special event going on and it's something that you can really enjoy and it's much more well-rounded. And also I think acknowledges the Moose and their contribution to the community and what the Moose really value, you know, promotes the values of the organization, whether it's something like giving back to the Polar Bear Rescue Team efforts or showing support for multiculturalism in the community, various groups that they get involved with. It's just, I think, a much more balanced night, a much more balanced presentation, if you will, that it's not just a sporting event, it's not just a hockey game and who gets more goals. But, you know, bigger values and more important impacts. And I think that's better for everybody, not just players, but organizationally and for the fans.
The first of six games on this homestand will take place tonight. The Manitoba Moose and the Texas Stars. Moose broadcaster Mitch Peacock will have the call tonight on TSN 1290. Mitch, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, guys. I'm going to do my best tonight. It won't be easy. I'm stuck with Derek Meach, but I'll give it a shot.
Well, good luck with that. We know you can do it with one hand tied behind your back. Thanks, Mitch.
Cheers, guys.
When we come back, one final segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day and your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Saturday morning. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day. As I mentioned, the jam-packed day on the station right after us. Hustler will be by with the afternoon ride, which will start in the mid-morning. So I guess it's the mid-morning ride on this rare Saturday early start for the Winnipeg Jets. And then, of course, we have the broadcast between the Jets and the Senators. Kevin O is going to be by for a while and leading right into the Manitoba Moose game tonight against the Texas Stars. So just keep your radio, locked on this station, TSN
and
Radio
post-game,
1290.
Post-game Moose, where do you go?
Moosehockey.com?
No.
Oh.
LegalCurve.com.
Okay, sorry. I didn't know. Sorry, I wasn't sure what you were. You can go to Moosehockey.com too.
You can.
But you should always go to LegalCurve.com.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You can listen. If you want to listen to Mitch on the broadcast, obviously, you're going to listen to 1290. And if you want to get some stuff, you go to LegalCurve.com.
If you don't have LegalCurve.com bookmarked by this point,
Dave Manouk, will come to your house and bookmark it on your computer for you.
That's true.
That is a service Dave Manouk offers.
Yeah, he does house visits.
Absolutely. You just tweet at LegalCurve. I'll show up. Give me your address. And I'll make it your bookmark.
Yeah.
Not a problem.
Not a problem at all. That restraining order won't certainly be filed.
Well, it's only against Ezzy. I'm okay.
You're okay? It's just Ezzy that's got the authorities on the lookout for him?
He's got a cease and desist from everybody's house.
It's nice, though. He drives around with the Illegal Curve license plate, so we know that we can just keep track of where he is at all times.
You have to be on bumper stumpers to recognize that one.
Well, it's true. Unless you, I mean, I don't know. It's not the, worst.
I couldn't fit Illegal Curve on the entire license plate.
For the record, it shows how selfless Ezzy is, though, because he could have very easily done ICEZG.
Yeah.
And instead, to show that he's the ultimate team player, the consummate team man, he went with Illegal Curve.
Well, it was...
ICEZG is Illegal Curve, so they could have just done either or, and it's basically the same thing.
Right, and it was either Illegal Curve or Cool Guy, and obviously someone already had Cool Guy, right?
I'm pretty sure Huss has Cool Guy, actually.
Anyways, like you said, it'll be an important weekend for the Winnipeg Winnipeg Jets. They have two games heading out, starting this afternoon in Ottawa against the Senators, then tomorrow afternoon against the Buffalo Sabres. Both the Senators and Sabres are much better teams at home than they are on the road. Mm-hmm. We know that they can both score. We know that the defense has been lacking for both teams. So the Jets have to come with the right mindset, I think, especially today against the Senators team, that they're feeling good about themselves coming off of a victory against the woeful Anaheim Ducks. The Jets need to bounce back from what was their probably one of their worst performances of the year in Montreal, and you know, obviously the opportunity to forget about that game starts at 1 o'clock this afternoon.
Right, Drew, and I expect a much better game from the Jets this afternoon. I think we all do, and you can't look past the Senators to tomorrow against the Sabres, but you know you have to take care of business, and you know the Jets should beat the Senators just based on skill alone, and mm-hmm. you know they're obviously going to benefit from having Josh Morrissey back in the lineup, and you know we'll wait to find out here, you know, when Paul Maurice talks before the game, you know, whether or not the Jets are going to have to insert you know, Sammy Niku into the lineup, because he talked about another defenseman possibly being out of the lineup, so mm-hmm. when you talk about, you know, the Senators team, yes, sure, they're a terrible team, worst in the NHL, but, you know, they have the ability to win the odd game like we saw the other night against the Ducks. But a crucial couple of games here, guys, because as you mentioned, you know, the game against the Montreal Canadiens followed a very disappointing overtime loss to the Sharks, a game in which, you know, they had the power play in overtime. They could have got the 2 points in that game. So you better believe the Jets want to win both of these games. I mean, they see a team like the Nashville Predators. They only have a couple of games in hand now. At one point, the Jets had four.
Two games in hand on the Predators. A point
the Preds
up.
Have caught up.
Yeah, a point up on the Predators. The Predators have the St. Louis Blues this afternoon. In what the Blues are playing great hockey, so that should be an interesting Central Division battle as well. That's it for the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our guests, Mitch Peacock, Mike Harrington, Stephen Wino, Dean Brown, and Paul Edmonds. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca, on illegalcurve.com, and you can also subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, get it sent to your device each and every week. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to our producer, Sean Asor, doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for the afternoon ride on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.